So 3-1 loss to Mexico.
Yeah.
And, you know, before we took the break, I made the point, you know, people are going to roll their eyes, 3-1 loss to Mexico and, you know, gritty Canadians, valiant effort, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. Except I don't know. You know, it's funny. I was watching that and I didn't stay up for the whole game, but I dropped it about halfway through the second half. But I came away thinking, you know, and I know every time we come on, we think, you know, like we're you know, tooting John Herdman's horn. But man, I came away thinking that there is a real strategic and tactical bent to this team that we haven't seen in the past. And I don't know how much of that is the coach or how much of that, John, quite frankly, is that there is more talent at his disposal. But I really like some of the things I've seen from this team. And the other thing I really like, and I know, you know, soccer fans know this very well. I mean, there you have to have a certain mindset to coach in a tournament versus coaching a league match, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you take a look at the Germans and at any major tournament, and the thing that they're always sort of complimented for is what I call tournament management. I think they understand more than anyone. You'll excuse the cliche that it's a marathon and not a sprint. Mm-hmm. And I think John gets that. So your question as to whether, you know, the tactical clarity, whether it's him or it's just the depth of and quality of players he has available to him, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, talking to Jonathan Osorio, you know, before the tournament, and I asked him about what John Herdman has brought to the club, to the team, and he said obviously he's helped change the culture and there's a togetherness amongst the players that he's never quite experienced, and this is his fourth Gold Cup. But he also said there's a clarity in everything that they do, from tactics to training to, you know, specific roles that players are given. So I think, you know, John he's really obviously helped to change the culture, but I think he's brought a clarity on all levels to the national team. And I think they're benefiting from that clarity right now.
Yeah, and it really does seem as if, you know, watching what he was doing last night, watching his selection, you really did get the sense that there was a certain aspect of trying out something to see how it looks against Mexico, maybe giving Mexico a bit of a false look in a couple of instances, but also keeping some stuff back. Like, I would think the next time they meet, he would, unless I'm wrong, would you think he'd start with a 4-3-3 right from the get-go next time? Or do you think we would see a 3-4-3 and then maybe it morph into a 4-3-3?
No, I think we'll see the 4-3-3, and it wasn't just the formation. It was, you know, who he held back yesterday. I mean, he made six lineup changes, and he didn't start Scott Arfield, Junior Hoylett, Jonathan David. Those were all the three guys who scored in the opener against Martinique. Osorio didn't start. So I think you're quite right. I think he was trying to show Mexico a different look, thinking that, you know, and I think John firmly believes that, you know, they're probably going to meet Mexico in the semifinals. That's, you know, for him to sort of look that far ahead and sort of, as I said, manage the tournament, you know, I think that's, you know, very progressive for him. I think there's an argument to be made that he's being a bit presumptuous and that, you know, they're probably going to have to get by Costa Rica in the next round before they get to the semifinals, and Costa Rica is no soft touch. But, you know, this is a different approach from a Canadian national team manager at a Gold Cup that I can't ever remember seeing. So it's a bit different. You know, if it works out in the end, then it works out in the end. We'll have to see how it plays out.
Teba Hutchison playing in the back. What have you made of that of that decision so far? And is that something we will see for the rest of the tournament?
I think he's just filling sort of a role right now. I mean, they're not particularly deep at, you know, center back position. I think he's did okay. I mean, I would have faulted him a little bit for the opening goal yesterday. I think he could have been a little bit better, but I don't think it's his best position. I mean, I think he really has to be sort of be pushed further up into the central midfield. That's just his natural position. I think that's his best position. I suspect that as kind of guys get healthy a little bit, and we saw Daniil Henry play yesterday after missing the opener due to an injury, I suspect that, you know, John will push Atiba back into the midfield and just into a more natural role.
Now let's shift focus a little bit to the women's team. They will play the Netherlands. This is the big match of their first round for them, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think this is sort of like the biggest match they've had in the Kenneth Heiner-Muller era since he took over for John Urban. They haven't really sort of faced an opponent like this. Well, maybe England. I think they played them in a friendly. But no question, after breezing through Cameroon and New Zealand, game at Canada really dominated and should have won. I think this is their stiffest test. The Netherlands are the reigning European champions. And the Dutch program has really kind of come on leaps and bounds in the last 5 to 10 years. So they're a very technical side. They're going to see more of the ball than Cameroon and New Zealand did. So I think this will be a stern test for Canada. I still think it's a winnable game for Canada. It's still a game that they should win because they've dominated the series historically. But I don't think there's any question that the Dutch are going to give them Canada their toughest game in France thus far.
What have you made of Canada so far at this tournament?
Getting the job done. Not spectacular. Was it 3 goals in 2 games? I mean, tight defensively. But again, I think you have to sort of look at the quality of the opposition. And I mean, you didn't really expect Cameroon or New Zealand to press them all that much. They've kind of done what they've had to do. They've been unspectacular, but they've got the job done. Christine Sinclair, I think people are unfairly criticizing her for not scoring any goals. But, she set a couple posts and she's had the goalkeepers come up with big saves to stop her, but they've gotten by without her goals thus far. So they've been solid. But again, I think this is going to be an entirely different test for them. So I'm really interested to see how they, if they can sort of up their game a bit when the quality of the opposition is significantly tougher.
Yeah, it's interesting watching this team play and comparing it to some of the the really good women's teams we've had in the past. There does seem to be a more, I don't know if I'd say a more pronounced emphasis on defense. There seems to be, I've often felt that Canadian teams sometimes panicked in the back defensively and got a little over anxious. And again, you're right, it depends on the quality of the opposition, John, but I don't get that sense from this team. They seem to be much more composed on the ball than Canadian teams in the past. I'm talking about at the back.
Yeah, I totally agree, Jeff. I mean, when you look at, a player like Kadisha Buchanan, who is, I think, 22, 23, and still, I think already regarded as one of the best center backs in international women's soccer, I think that says a lot. And the partnership she's formed with Shalina Zdorsky in the center of defense has been sensational. And that was sort of, Canada's problem last time out at the 2015 World Cup, was they didn't sort of have that defensive solidity, and it didn't seem like, a little bit frail at times. Now there's an assuredness and a solidity that wasn't always necessarily there. And I think, Buchanan is a big reason. I think Desiree Scott, too. I mean, you have to sort of give credit to the Canadian midfield and players like Desiree Scott, the Winnipeg-born midfielder, who really does a great job of protecting the back four and just sort of acting as that first line of defense. So I think it's the entire team. I mean, just from front to back, I think everyone sort of defends as one. So, obviously I think the back four deserve a lot of the credit, but I think just overall from a defensive structure, the team is just, more solid than it's ever been.
What have you made of the tournament, the quality of play, the organization of the tournament? There've been some really good matches. We all saw what happened in Thailand and the US, but there've been almost the obligatory ticket snafus when it comes to FIFA. I mean, you sort of accept that as it's going to happen. But the tournament itself, has the women's game taken a step forward in terms of quality, John?
I think it's just me maybe, but I think it's been more like a side or a step sideways. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's been sort of, I haven't been blown away compared to 2015. Like, I haven't said, oh, wow, the women's game has really kind of gone on leaps and bounds. As you said, you're still seeing there's still a great disparity between the haves and have-nots. the perfect example being, the Americans thrashing Thailand. And, Argentina is, I think has come on. And then they did sensationally yesterday to come from 3-0 down to tie Scotland and knock them out of the competition. But I don't get the sense that I just don't see there being sort of massive improvement in the women's game. And I think that comes down to, federations not sort of properly funding the women's game and just sort of not funneling proper resources into it. I think if you saw that, then, these tournaments would be a little bit more competitive. I do think it's improved, I guess, a little bit in that, you know, now you're seeing sort of more players playing at top clubs in Europe and stuff like that. And, you know, Tanisha Buchanan is a perfect example. She plays in France with Olympique Lyon, and she's won Champions League titles. But overall, you know, I don't know that, you know, the quality of play or sort of the gap between, as I said, the haves and have-nots has shrunk since, 4 years ago in Canada.
Yeah, it does seem, it seems as if there's maybe a little more depth in Europe or a little more consistency with some of the European teams. But, you know, you mentioned the Argentine team and, you know, the story about the Argentine team, they slept in their team bus before an international match because the Federation didn't get a hotel room for them. They weren't allowed to practice on the men's grass pitch at the national training facility. They were essentially shoved off to the side and you know, practiced on a on an artificial pitch. And you still hear stories like, I mean, the Jamaican women's team, the only reason they're in this tournament is because the Marley family, Cedelia Marley, basically funded them. You still, unfortunately, hear those stories, don't you, of the organization, the national organizations, and how they treat women's soccer.
Yeah, and even Thailand is another one. I mean, the only reason that they're in the tournament is because they have this independent sort of backer who's sort of funding the team. And I think she's like a multimillionaire, and she's giving like the Thai players jobs as well, like non-soccer jobs when they're not training. So, again, I think it just sort of goes to you know, the lack of FAs around the world not sort of properly funding their women's program. And, you know, I think FIFA bears some responsibility in this too. I mean, if they're really serious about this and promoting the women's game, then I think they would crack the whip a little bit and, you know, come down on these FAs and offer more prize money for the women's team as well. You know, there's, I don't think there's any question that the men's World Cup in terms of internet, in terms of, you know, global appeal and money that it brings in is far surpasses the women's game. But I would suggest that the gap in sort of prize money is, you know, just ludicrously out of whack. So, I mean, if FIFA was really serious, I think they could do a lot more as well, in addition to the FAs doing more as well.